argument this morning is Johnson versus, how do we pronounce that, Judge Evans? What's that county?
Oh,
Manitowoc?
That's an Indian
enough?
Name.
Manitowoc County. Yeah. We have our judge from Wisconsin. That's why we defer to pronunciation.
See, the Manitowoc Ships high school basketball team won the state championship in 1956. Class A.
You were the star?
Now you see the depth of Judge Evans' scholarship.
Yeah. It about ends with Wisconsin high school basketball in the 50s.
Mr. Lash.
Thank you.
We used 3 minutes of your time just now.
I figured you'd let me know when you were ready. Counsel, judges, thank you for the honor and privilege of being here. You already know my name, but I'm Darrell Lotch. I represent Roland Johnson, the plaintiff appellant in this case. I apologize for my voice. I'm coming off of some bronchitis. If I start coughing, it's not out of disrespect or even nerves. It's doing better, so hopefully it won't be an issue. This case is before this court on appeal from summary judgment, granted in favor of defendants on all theories. The relief that plaintiff appellant is requesting is asking that the decision of the trial court be reversed, judgment ordered in favor of plaintiff as to liability, and the case remanded for determination of damages.
Now, is Avery still appealing his conviction?
Yes.
Where is that at right now?
I think he just lost at the Court of Appeals and will be petitioning for review. And without speculating, he's likely to find other grounds for appeal. He's life without possibility of extended supervision, a.k.a. parole. Mm-hmm. What this case is about is whether society as a whole should share in the financial burden incurred when law enforcement officers took steps to protect, you know, all of the citizens from a dangerous murderer who was just mentioned by Judge Evans, Stephen Avery. And in Wisconsin, Mr. Avery is very well known because he served 18 years and a month or two for a conviction on which he was exonerated, and then a few years later committed the offense that led to this investigation. And in the meantime, there was a civil lawsuit that he filed against Manitowoc County, his emergence as a suspect a very delicate and sensitive matter for Manitowoc County, and then ultimately for Calumet County, which is immediately adjacent to the west. Manitowoc County, not sure how much this matters, but Manitowoc County is, in Wisconsin, is more or less urban, Manitowoc being 60 or 70,000 and then rural around there, and Calumet County is immediately to the west and is rural. But Calumet County undertook the investigation at Manitowoc's request under mutual aid. And it was an unusual homicide, unusual murder, because the victim's body was not found, and so it was a disappearance initially, and then it emerged that the victim was last at Stephen Avery's residence at his request to take pictures of a vehicle. The residence where Mr. Avery was living is owned by Mr. Johnson. It's on Avery Road in rural Manitowoc County and is right next to property owned by the Averys. Mr. Johnson purchased it as a weekend residence and someplace to go once he retired. And so he was there on occasion, and as he got older, he was there more often. Issues emerged from this. There were multiple search warrants extending from November of 2005 through March of 2006, with execution of those search warrants in, I think, all instances, but certainly in several instances, taking being multiple executions, so and appropriately so. So police were at the property.
Yeah, you don't really challenge any of the searches that were conducted. They were all conducted pursuant to valid search warrants. They didn't exceed the scope of the warrants.
That's correct. The only thing that's where there's any challenge to reasonableness at all is the execution of the of one part of the final search warrant.
The cement floor.
Right, the garage floor that was jackhammered.
Mr. Latch, you know, as I understand it, you didn't present a liability expert. And what I've been wondering is how then could the fact finder infer that it was unreasonable for the officers who were executing the search warrant to use a jackhammer instead of a diamond or a carbide sided saw, whatever that is.
Okay. Well, it's an objective reasonableness standard for not only the issuance of a search warrant, but the manner in which it's executed.
Yeah, but did any of the defendants admit, for example, that a saw would have worked just as well in terms of gathering the evidence and would have been better at minimizing any damage?
Defendants' affidavits were simply that none was available. Didn't take issue with whether it would have worked well or not. Mr. Johnson's affidavit was that it would have worked better, and...
Well, you know, it was Ms. Mitch's affidavit, I think, that you're talking about, and what that said was that there was no alternative method that would exist to obtain blood samples under concrete other than to use a jackhammer. You know, what evidence do you have that would contradict her on that point?
Well, again, Mr. Johnson's affidavit, and it really speaks for itself because, first of all, excuse me, the stage of the investigation and the nature, the search warrant application talks about, and I may not get this exactly right, but genetic materials, essentially. It's clear that it's traces. And logic also tells you, if they've been out there from November to March, that what's being looked for isn't pools of blood that formed on the garage floor, nor was this a situation where something new was poured over the top of something that might have been there.
Yeah, but for instance, were the defendants asked in discovery about the possibility of renting the saw?
No.
I mean, give me some evidence.
No, there was very scant discovery because there was very little dispute, not really any dispute as to the facts other than, I guess, the availability of a carbide saw or a diamond blade. Those are things that to handymen, to a layman who does any sort of work around the house, that's something that's readily apparent. It's not something where it's, I think it's with well within the realm of a layperson.
Well, whether the officers, you know, used a saw or a jackhammer to take up portions of the floor, they were going to cause significant damage, no question about that. So what we want to get into here, I guess, is for qualified immunity purposes, what precedent would have told them that they had to use what you believe to be the least damaging means, even if it meant renting a saw and, you know, or delaying the search until a saw is available? What do we have here? You've got to help us.
Well, in terms of precedent, first of all, the general principle to cause the least amount of damage consistent with an effective search, and then secondly, and I'm not being coy, common sense. Because really, if you're looking for genetic material, the last thing you want to do is start pounding on concrete, breaking it up, causing it to mix, to shatter, and anything that's adhering to it, which by definition what they were looking for was minute, to become intermixed. What common sense would indicate would be that you would take something where, and if you recall the photographs that are in the appendix, there are areas circled. So those were the suspect areas, as it were. That's the areas that were being examined. And especially given the nature of what was being looked for, what would be indicated is that you would use something like a saw where you can cut around. It'd be the difference between using a scissors and a hammer.
Look, without a liability expert, I just cannot agree with you. I'm really sorry, Mr.
Well, sorry to hear that. But
let me ask you about your legal theory here. It seems to me you're arguing that this is a takings case.
Yes.
But here the government, the Calumet County, Manitowoc County, they're operating under the police power, not the government's power of eminent domain. So I just have a hard time seeing how this is a takings clause case. Maybe I'm wrong.
I think it is primarily a takings case, and that was the thrust of the complaint and of the briefs.
But you agree that none of the actions that caused damages here to your client's property came about because of the power of eminent domain by the counties involved?
Correct. And there are any number of takings cases that don't involve eminent domain. Just off the top of my head, it's cited, I think, in the main brief, United States versus Causey, World War II era case, an air base in one of the Carolinas, if memory serves. The overflights of airplanes coming and going caused damage to Causey, not physical damage, but his farming operation was interrupted.
But how about a case where the government is clearly acting under its police power, as it was here, being a case, presenting a case under the takings clause?
Federal cases, I found none. I cited a number of state cases that invoke state versions of takings clauses.
Right. So if there's potential restitution available to him under state law, wouldn't that moot his takings claim? It would moot it, wouldn't it? I can't understand why he's not obliged to first pursue the remedies that are available, under state law before coming into federal court on a takings claim.
Other than the statute available for asking for return of the items of personal property, 96820, I believe. Other than that, there is no state statute directly on point, and this was originally pled both as takings clause under the Fifth Amendment and takings clause under, I believe it's Article 13 of the Wisconsin Constitution. Judge Randa, having ruled on the federal claims, dismissed the state claims, and I understand why.
But he had a pending state claim seeking a hearing. Mr. Johnson did.
Yes. And Judge Randa, and again, I understand why, declined to exercise that.
He isn't disputing that there or state remedies available to him to seek compensation?
Again, the only state remedy is under the Wisconsin Constitution. There's no Wisconsin statute that says if damage is caused by police officers, here's where you go. And this is the statute you follow. 968-20 would only be about return of those items of personal property.
Well, I have to tell you that I absolutely do not understand how you can describe the seizure of evidence as a taking until he pursues that procedure that is available to him. I just don't get it.
Well, at this point, and the better practice would have been to bring that motion in Manitowoc County. I'm not going to deny the obvious. I simply, again, being candid, I simply didn't think of that until it came up. But again, looking at it from a practical aspect, by now it's been, 4 years, 5 years? Certainly, he asked informally.
But the appeals are going on. The appeals are going on. Who knows what might happen?
Exactly.
The government needs that stuff.
And
in case.
And so be it. But the issue isn't whether the government did anything wrong, or whether it needs that stuff, as you put it. The issue is, you know, and
inelegant. I'm sorry.
Quite all right. We're cutting to the core. And again, the items of personal property are really the tail wagging the dog. The real issue here is the damages, because that's what's expensive, and those couldn't be retrieved under 968-20 or anything else. Either Mr. Johnson's compensated for those damages, or he bears the financial burden. And a takings case, by its
name, do standard homeowners policies cover things like this? I have no idea.
Sadly, his had lapsed. So
it would cover it, though, I would think.
I would hope so, but
I mean, I don't know.
I don't know either, and I wish his hadn't, and we wouldn't be here on this issue if it had. But again, a takings case, by its nature, is acknowledging up front that the governmental action was appropriate. It's not challenging the governmental action at all. It is saying the government took this action, understandably, in furtherance of the interests of the general public. But then the next issue is a financial burden has been incurred, and should, in this case, Mr. Johnson bear that financial burden, or should it be borne to society as a whole through the government compensating him? That's what that's takings analysis. So forget about quibbling about whether the reasonableness or unreasonableness of a jackhammer when a saw would have done. And again, I'm not backing off that point. I do think it's rather like using a hammer instead of a scissors, and it was a bad idea and unreasonable on its face. But forget about that. For takings analysis, it's quite different. For takings analysis, it happened, it's conceded, it's regarded as appropriate. The only issue is it of a nature where the burden should be shared, should be spread, or should Mr. Johnson bear it all himself?
If there's lesser damage by the use of the carbide saw, would you still be here, Mr. Latch?
I'm tempted to say doubtful, because the rest of it didn't
apply. Because the damages would be de minimis? I mean, clearly the floor would be impacted.
But the kind of repairs, if you cut a square out.
No, I appreciate that. But my point is, if we're going to speak to liability, we focus on this case, but must look down the road.
Right.
You know, the kicking in of a door versus the jackhammer on a drug raid versus bringing a police locksmith along if there isn't a threat of imminent harm. So, you know, they could have even less damage if a locksmith were to go through a door. So are we here because it's the extent of damage caused by the...
Well, as a practical matter, I suspect yes. I mean, if it had been a couple of thousand...
So what's the principle here?
Well, the...
Any damage caused in the execution of a search warrant, police driving over the curtilage and leaving track marks on a lawn in a hurry to get there, would we have to have the lawn brought back to the position it ought to have been or was before the squad car rolled over it?
Takings analysis, ad hoc, fact intensive, equity and fairness, those are all phrases you see throughout the cases. By their nature, all of those factors can be weighed. If there had been $180 in damages, you know, would it make sense to be here, and would it be as serious a matter? And setting aside whether reasonable or unreasonable, could be entirely, maybe that was the only way, could be entirely reasonable, but still got darned expensive. And again, you get to weigh all those factors, and that's part of an ad hoc, fact-intensive analysis.
Thank you, Mr. Lash.
Thank you.
Mr. Bitar?
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Ramsey Bitar. I represent Manitowoc and Calumet County, along with Sheriff Pagel, Deputies Tyson, Baldwin, Weigert, and Dietering.
Mr. Bitar, before you even begin, would you just help us out by summarizing what the record tells us as to why the defendants used a jackhammer rather than a saw, whether a saw would have done the job just as well in, you know, terms of evidence gathering, and I guess whether a saw would more effectively minimize the damage to the floor.
The only admissible competent evidence in the record would be the affidavit of Baldwin. If you look at her affidavit, Exhibit 13, and if you look in particular at the search warrant, March 1st, 2006, it'll explain that on that day, the co-murderer here, Brandon Dassey, finally...
The co-murderer?
Well, the case involves both Mr. Avery committing a gruesome act along with his nephew. And gruesome and heinous actions were taken in the bedroom against a young lady. They eventually take the young lady out to the garage, commit further heinous acts, destroy the body behind the garage. And Mr. Dassey did not finally confess until March 2006. And if you look at the search warrant of and the affidavit of Deputy Baldwin, it explains all that. And that goes directly to one of the points that plaintiffs are making in their briefing. They make this argument. It almost sounds like an argument Stephen Avery would make, that there was no business in looking at the garage 5 months after they began the investigation. Well, that's because 5 months later, someone finally came in and told everyone what was going on and where they could find the body. So you want to look at her affidavit, and nothing else was available other than the jackhammer and the arguments they're trying to make here. It just can't be the law. It can't be the law that sitting in this cool courtroom 4 or 5 years later, using hindsight, that we can come up with a better tool to dig for biological evidence under a garage. The affidavit of Baldwin says it would have delayed the investigation if they had to use shovels or other, you know, primitive type instruments like that. I mean, the only thing they had available was the jackhammer. And the affidavit of Mr. Johnson saying, well, they could have used a carbide saw, that's based on his affidavit 4 years later, sitting at his home, surfing the internet, looking for something that he can find at the local hardware store. I mean, he's a law enforcement officer at the time, supposed to, you know, stop what she's doing in the middle of an investigation and see what's available at Home Depot or Menards or any other hardware store. I just don't think that's the law.
Is the jackhammer in the inventory of the department? Is that why they used it?
I think so. They
used what was within their tool shed, so to speak.
That's my understanding. And what we have to understand as well, and those familiar with this criminal actions that were undertaken. This was a massive investigation. We're talking a couple hundred acres of property. It was adjacent to a junkyard that had 3,000-4,000 junked vehicles. So these officers were busy on a day-to-day basis. And plaintiffs in this case never developed a record to the contrary. The only equipment they had was a jackhammer, and that's what they used, and it was reasonable.
And I'm going to ask you a question about Wisconsin. I really don't know what it is on a point like this, but here's an example. My good friend Judge Flom has a summer place in Lake Geneva, which he retreats to occasionally. Now let's suppose that Walworth County Sheriff's Department is chasing somebody, and the report is that that person, the subject of the chase, ran into Judge Flom's Lake Geneva home. Police are called. They're yelling, come out, come out. Person won't come out. So they use a battering ram. They break through the door, come in. They don't find the person there. So they leave. Now, a couple of days later, Judge Flom goes back to Walworth County for the weekend, and his place has been destroyed. Does Wisconsin law provide some sort of remedy for him, or does he have to pay those damages himself?
Well, and that's the other point. It goes directly to the Fifth Amendment claim. And again, I don't know why we're here and what type of law he's looking for. This person would have available remedies. They have 968.20, which allows for return of property.
In my example, there's no property that's been
okay.
Taken.
There's that's also 973.20, allowing for restitution. There's also the Crime Victims Fund. There could be other remedies. The point is, in this case, and counsel has just admitted it, they did nothing. The first step was walking into the federal courthouse asking for a takings claim.
So in my example, I'd like you just to tell me, what is the Wisconsin law that would provide a remedy for the situation I gave you in this example?
I think the one statute to look at would be 973.20, restitution. There's the Crime Victim Fund, which is under Chapter 949.
Yeah, but is it clear he had standing to seek restitution under the Crime Victims Compensation Fund?
Yeah, I don't know that, Your Honor.
Well, he's not a victim of by a criminal defendant. It was the police that broke in and did the damage in my example.
I don't know that, but that's my point. There was never an effort whatsoever to see what was available. I mean, he even admitted he never even asked the district attorney to return some of his items. Whether he has other relief in the state court system, I don't know. I imagine he would. And if we look at a number of these cases that discuss takings and, you know, whether a damage to a door or during the search the whole house burns down, I mean, there's cases like that, and they consistently find, very often, that there's either no Fourth Amendment violation, as in a case like this where the officers acted reasonably and there's no dispute about probable cause or the manner of execution of the warrants, and it's also found that there's no takings cases. I mean, or no takings under the law. You can look at Eggleston.
Wait a minute. Let's just assume for a moment that Mr. Johnson pursued restitution under Wisconsin law, and he got nothing. He gets nothing from all this, you know, because you've got a lot of could, you know, could and might in there. Why wouldn't that be a taking? The evidence was seized for a public purpose, and his property suffered permanent damage as a result.
I don't think it's that easy. I mean, facially, it sounds like, sure.
I'm not making it easy.
Facially, it sounds like there might be a takings, but there's no case cited by Mr. Johnson explaining under the circumstances of this case involving law enforcement, trying to enforce the criminal laws, trying to seize evidence.
So you're basically saying he waived all of those arguments.
He did.
Well, you're also saying it's not right.
And it's not right, and that's right.
You don't have to get to what could or should have. You're just saying, as of today, it's not right.
That's my point. I mean, there were available avenues of redress he could have pursued. He never pursued them. I don't know why we're in federal court.
It's a nice place to be on.
It is a nice place, and this is a beautiful room. I'd also like to make a couple of points. The prosecution is still ongoing. The state has just filed its main brief in the Court of Appeals in Wisconsin, and it's still ongoing. And again, going back to the taking type claims, this is not a case involving physical, permanent appropriation or invasion of someone's land. This is the police power for law enforcement uses. This case in no way involves a legislative act in which the legislature is trying to...
Could there ever be any overreaching? Suppose, because of the heinous nature of this crime, after they executed the search warrant, one of the officers, appalled at what occurred, goes beyond what is his discretion and torches the garage. Would you say that still that kind of a police overreaching, if you will, much less a wanton destruction, would still require the route to be taken through the Wisconsin state courts first? Would we have a possible federal case?
Well, I think that there's two issues there. First, if he's trying to bring some type of takings claim, he has available remedies, and those should be pursued. But going to the issue of the Fourth Amendment and an officer exceeding the scope of the warrant, doing something as outrageous as that, and there are cases like that, that might even be cited in some of the briefs, that would probably be a violation of the Fourth Amendment. But here, what's critical is that it's undisputed that these officers had valid search warrants and that they acted reasonably and professionally in carrying out the search. He can't just walk in 4 years later in an affidavit and speculate that some other tool might have been better. It just upends Fourth Amendment law. Just one last point. The Cosby decision was raised. Takings case, again, that's a matter of physical appropriation, a permanent invasion. There was some discussion about Mr. Johnson's innocence. That really has never been the guiding factor in any of these cases. And lastly, you're to look at the character of the government action, which in this case, the character of the government action is law enforcement. It's not eminent domain. At the end of the day, I think what plaintiffs are asking this court to do is ab lib on a takings claim. And I just think that's unfounded. So if there are no further questions, I think I will rest.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Patak. Well, at your time it expired, but we asked you a fair number of questions, so you may have 2 minutes. And as you reach the podium, let me just ask you a quick question. If we had used a carbide saw in this instance, but it wasn't employed by the most skilled of the available officers, so that even with the carbide saw, would we be looking at which officer was most skilled on execution of that warrant? I mean, would that be a point you might add to if you were looking at the damages in this case?
No, I don't think so. Because, if the most appropriate tool, and the whole point of Mr. Johnson's affidavit, you know, the business about not being available came up during briefing on the summary judgment motions with the affidavit, so Mr. Johnson responded to it. And we had assumed that they rented the jackhammer. First time I've heard that they had one in the inventory was today, and they could have just as readily rented something else that would work better. But in any event, if you're using the appropriate tool but not as skillfully as you might, that's not a reasonableness issue anymore.
With time not being absolutely critical here because of the delay, should a responsible sheriff's department go to a construction company? And not because they normally aren't in the business of breaking up floors of garages.
I think that would have been a better practice. You know, again, getting to the reasonableness, and
that's what I want to speak to, the reasonableness. Yeah.
And it's awfully important to not get the takings analysis and the reasonableness analysis. I mean, they kind of get mixed together when you're not careful.
Well, that's why you're here to help us.
I hope so. Because again, carbide saw, now the reasonableness issue. I mean, the Becker case that Judge Randa cited, And where I took issue is he was pretty much, the way I read it, pretty much saying, well, gee, court said in Becker you can do it, therefore you can always use a jackhammer, it doesn't matter. And a closer reading of Becker says, well, under those circumstances where the floor, the concrete was poured, pretty high level of suspicion with the for the purpose of concealing evidence. You know, right after a search warrant had been executed against an adjacent property, that sort of thing. A different issue here, but if you're using a reasonable method and it causes damages, okay, Fourth Amendment's out, the takings issue is still, the damages are there. And
your final position is there is no ripeness problem here.
I don't think there's anything that requires that you go through every conceivable remedy before you can bring a takings claim. It lies in the Constitution.
All right.
That's why we brought both Wisconsin and federal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pitara. The case is taken under advisement. The court will proceed.